Hey, this is Sam Minter. I just wanted to have a quick note before starting the real show. And yes, that's Alex. You can hear crying in the background. But what I wanted to mention... Yes, hi, Alex. What I wanted to mention was that as I was putting together the show, or actually right before I started to put this show together, I looked at the stats from last week's show and realized that we had more downloads of last week's show than any other show since we started doing Curmudgeon's Corner on as a podcast, as opposed to way back when we were in college. And I also realized that most of the people who hit play and listened were probably there because it mentioned There's an Alex on My Lap, and was posted right in the middle of all of the various things that I was posting about, hey, I just had a baby. And of course, when they got there and played it, all you would have heard was, hey, I'm kind of busy because I just had a baby, and we're not going to do a real show. And it was, you know, 2 minutes and 50 seconds of pretty much nothing. You know, there was no, you know, me talking about, hey, I just had a baby and here's how it felt like and all that kind of lovely stuff. There was just nothing. And so I apologize to any of those people who hit play and were hoping for something more. And I know pretty much none of those people are going to be back this week, but I thought I'd spend a few minutes on that anyway. But first, I wanted to play you a quick clip, and I did not take video, but I did take audio of Alex actually being born. So, and it was a C-section, so it's a little bit different than, you know, if it wasn't, but, you know, here you go. Okay, that was him now, not the thing. Here's the thing now.
All right, kiddo, here comes that second, that big tumble pressure that I told you about, okay? Mm-hmm. Your job is to breathe as best as you can against it. Big, deep breaths, okay? A lot of pulling and tugging from below, a lot of stretching stuff. Here we go, after Alex. A lot of pressure from above, big, deep mm-hmm. breaths for me.
Lots of pressure. All right.
Look over there. Can you see over there?
And he's all peeling.
It's great. It's right on time.
He needs a bath.
Badly.
Sorry. That's
right on. And he sounds a little bit less like a cat now. But, you know, I felt really bad after realizing so many people had listened that I hadn't done like a nice little commentary. I'd actually intended to do that kind of commentary to give like 15 minutes of, you know, my thoughts while I was there right in the hospital. It's why I'd brought all my audio equipment, well, not all my audio equipment, a headset, you know, to the hospital rather than just waiting and putting something out a couple days later when we were home. You know, I started to record and then Brandy woke up and then I was all self-conscious. And so I just did the short show. You know, for just a minute of this stuff, I mean, you know, it's been just under 2 weeks that we've had Alex. And, you know, despite occasionally fussing and crying like he is right now, you know, it is an absolute joy, of course. And anybody who has been in this position knows this. And so I felt like, you know, spending a lot of time talking about it is, you know, a little redundant because, you know, it's all either cliched or everybody who's a parent already knows or whatever. You know, it's great. He's adorable. He's fun. It's neat watching every little new thing they do, even when they're crying. Right, Alex? And he's probably hungry, so I'm going to take him to his mom shortly. You know, there's also, you know, the other cliches about not having enough sleep and things like that. And, you know, yes, I've had less sleep than I normally would, but Brandy's taken the brunt of that because, you know, she's food. And I'm not, usually, although we do have, you know, we're bottling a little bit to use there. But anyway, it's, you know, it's been a whirlwind couple of weeks, and I'll be heading back to work shortly. And I'm spending every minute I can with the little guy enjoying it completely. I mean, just getting to know him, and, you know, I know they don't have that much personality yet, right? But, you know, you get to know them. They're, even within the first couple of weeks, there's personality quirks that start to show through, which may, of course, change later. Right, Alex? Yes. Okay, enough of this. I spent 5 minutes on it, I guess a little bit more than 5 minutes, actually. So I guess we'll get to the regular show, and here we go. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, September 21st, 2009. This is Sam Minter. I've got Yvonne Beau with me. For the first time in a few weeks, we had a couple of strange shows, me by myself, and then me basically saying there wouldn't be a show because I was kind of preoccupied and busy.
I am here now again. Thank you, everybody. Hello.
And speaking of preoccupied and busy, I gave Yvonne a heads up that basically, because I have been preoccupied and busy, I have basically paid almost no attention whatsoever to news or current events in pretty much the last 2 weeks. So I have no clue what's going on. I mean, I caught a little bit here and there, but for most part, I have no idea. So Yvonne's going to have to drive what our topics have to be.
Well, I actually spent a little bit more time that I had been spending before on and I had been planning to do this regardless of whether you had had a chance to put together some topics. I didn't know how much you knew about what had been going on. I just wanted to get some of my thoughts organized and some things that have been happening over the last couple of weeks, and especially some things that I don't know were just kind of bothering me the last couple of weeks. I don't know. I gotten like really annoyed over a couple of topics, and I just wanted to make sure that that we talked about them. You know, so I guess if we want to just go ahead and get started, you know, on that.
You know, one thing before we do, I just wanted to mention.
Want to make some comments? Okay, go ahead.
I want to throw one thing out there. One of the feedback and suggestions we got was maybe instead of doing 4 15-minute segments, maybe we consider 10-minute segments. You want to do that?
Well, I figured that maybe today, since I know that you had been, so out of it for the last couple of weeks, we try to do that. Yeah, I mean, maybe we stick to a shorter show.
Yeah, but let's do 5 10-minute segments. How about that?
5 10-minute segments. Okay, we'll see if we get to 5 topics.
Okay, well, 4 if we run out. Okay, so let's go. We're 2 minutes in already. Let's go.
Okay, so the first thing is that I noticed that in the last couple of weeks, it became public that the major stock exchanges in the United States were engaged in a practice together with some major banks and brokerage houses called flash trading. I don't know if you've heard about this in the news over the last couple of weeks. Sam, I don't know.
I think I've heard the term before, but is this basically where you sort of get in and out really fast, like within seconds, when you see some market movement about to happen?
No. And don't worry about it if you don't know. I had no idea what the hell it meant until a couple of weeks ago.
Tell
okay,
us.
So don't despair that you hadn't heard it. Well, the main thing about it is that flash trading, what they had been doing is. Orders to buy and sell would come to the stock markets, would reach the exchanges. For an additional fee, they would let these major customers be able to preview those buy and sell orders. So they actually had information in advance of the prices that people were demanding for stocks. And because the nature of the stock markets where we're trading billions of, you know, shares a day, they were able to take advantage of those anomalies in order to profit by just moving sheer gargantuan amounts of volume through the markets, but through some programmed trading and taking advantage of that information. You know, I got to be quite honest that I was utterly flabbergasted at the fact that Goldman Sachs and other hedge funds and others were able to get advanced price information ahead of everybody else in order to actually fucking make a killing. You know, there's been huge discussion when this topic has come up over the last couple of weeks. The SEC is actually moving now to ban this practice because, to be quite honest, it's unfair. I mean, to say the least. And they're moving to ban it. But then it got me a little bit, you know, talking a little bit about how many people have been over the last couple of months, especially since the election, talking about regulations and markets and unregulated markets. And I know you have advocated many times libertarianism, you know, and how that had been very attractive to you on certain things. And I started going and I'm like looking at this market and I'm like looking at how we're getting, you know, most people that trade in stocks were getting royally fucked by these people, and started trying to analyze, you know, okay, so let's think about markets that are regulated and unregulated, and think about whether this has been, you know, what the benefits are that or not. I think that, you know, and I want to separate to people three different things. There's one thing when there is no market. There's a thing where there's a government monopoly on something. That's one thing. You can have a regulated market, and you can have an unregulated market. There's three different things. Now, the main difference between a regulated market and an unregulated market is that there are certain rules, there are disclosures, there are things that if people do illegal activity, you can actually prosecute those people for doing that. It's kind of like leveling the playing field, so, you know, the little guy doesn't get fucked by other people. Because the truth of the matter is that if you look at the history of the economy in the U.S. and even, like, I think a better microcosm of how economic developments happen in previous years, you look at Russia and their crony capitalism model right now. What happens when you don't have a regulated market is that you get this group of people that all of a sudden are able to somehow, through connections, amass all this great amount of capital. They take control of these companies, and then they wind up pretty much self-dealing themselves billions and billions of dollars while pretty much screwing everybody else out of, you know, out of everything. And I, you know, I don't know. I'm like, you know, this is just not a way to all that you get by that unregulated market is to make a group of people rich at the expense of everybody else. And I don't think that's beneficial. And I was looking at we're talking about unregulated markets the last couple of years. You know, think about what happened with Enron, for example, when they deregulated the energy market and how they fucked California by raising, you know, by fucking, you know, just jacking. They just made fake trades. They made everybody believe there was an energy shortage when none existed, for example. Look at what's happened with mortgages over the last 5 years. You know, it's one of the most unregulated markets that we've had. And the fact that, you know, I know so many people that are sitting on mortgages. And I'll tell you one thing. I figured out 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago that some of the terms in my mortgage – and I'm a pretty savvy guy, that I realized that there were certain terms that I was not aware of in my mortgage, which can make a change in my payments at some point that I had not anticipated at all.
Okay? Right, and this is the kind of thing where, you know, and like you said, you're a fairly savvy guy, but still you get down to the closing and you've got like these sheafs of paper in front of you, and
right,
you know, your agent or whatever tends to, like, you know, summarize what each section means, and
right.
You know, most people will just say, yeah, whatever, sign. You know, some people actually pay attention to what the agent says, but trust the agent. Very
right.
Few people probably actually read the whole damn thing, go over it with a fine-tooth comb, and on every sentence they don't understand, question and go back and forth on it until they do. I mean, that's got to be a rarity.
It is a total rarity. And the truth of the matter is that, you know, that's how most people, you know, wind up, for the most part, in mortgages that they couldn't afford. Now, the truth of the matter is that the change that I have is not a change. I'll defend the person who sold me the mortgage. It's not a back-breaking change, but it is a change. And I did not know it would happen.
So this is the kind of thing where if such and such conditions occur, then the monthly terms change in some way?
Yes. Okay. And I had not anticipated that actually was to happen. So I don't know. I think that right now, even with the changes, I made a calculation that actually, even with an increase on one side, I might wind up paying less anyway at that point. But still, anyway, the one thing I say about this is it is very easy to, when you don't have good regulations on disclosure, how people just get absolutely fucked. Because most people, I'm sorry, but you know, when you're doing, say, a complex transaction like a mortgage, you're purchasing a stock, you're buying a bond. If you don't have clear transparency rules, and if you don't have good methods of recourse, most of these companies can just go out there and just take advantage of the little guy very, very easily. And it's not a thing. Let me tell you something. You look through history, damn it, when you've had totally unregulated markets, what happens is a whole bunch of people wind up trying to collude, and they wind up trying to screw everybody. Unfortunately, human nature is not that great, okay? Well, it's not like they go out there and, like, they try to be, oh, we'll be nice and we'll try to treat everybody fairly. No.
True. No. And they're... you know, we're out of our 10 minutes, so let's take a break, and we'll be right back with more.
Okay.
What do you get when two housewives produce an online poetry journal? Poems celebrating dishwater, breastfeeding, and lunar phases? Quick trips with the pool boy? Yeah, maybe. But they like to believe they offer much more than that. There's no telling what you'll get at the No-Tell Motel. But I hear sneaking out and keeping everything hush-hush is kind of sexy, and they're hot for discretion. Having it all keeps our two housewives awfully busy, so they like to stop and smell the posies, spend quality time with their poets, which is why their rendezvous lasts a full 7 days, a new poem each weekday. Each year they slip their room key to 52 poets and indulge in 260 poems. Their spouses' misfortunes are your gains. Meet with them daily at notellmotel.org. They'll be in room 5C, sipping the latest cocktail recommended in Martha Stewart's Living, Scribbling Marginalia.
And we are back. I was just going to respond to Yvonne by saying, you know, there are a number of ways to deal with this. And yes, you could get into regulations that say, you know, all mortgages have to work exactly this way, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, there are also ways you could deal with it in terms of saying, you know, just going back to sort of what the idea of a contract means. A contract is supposed to be an agreement between essentially equals who both understand the terms of what they're agreeing to and making that exchange. And where, you know, one way to try to enforce this kind of stuff and make it so that, you know, you don't get people, you know, screwing people over with the fine print and such is basically say, you know, look, you know, you can have complex contracts, but only between people who are, you know, qualified to evaluate them on their own.
But look what that brings.
But here's what you can do. I mean, like, there is no... I mean, okay, I understand why it is built up over the course of years. And, you know, our lawyer friends are going to make comments on this. But I understand why the complexity is built up over the years, because you want to manage all the potential contingencies. And what if this happens? And what if this happens? And what if that happens? But there's no reason you couldn't have, you know, a mortgage contract that was one paragraph long. I will give you this much money on the condition that every month from now on, you pay me this much money for the next 30 years until you're out. If you don't, this happens.
That's true. You could make the contract a lot simpler than it is. However, the one thing that I feel that by doing that you would have is that, of course, in terms of what the lawyers would say is that in case something unexpected happens, one of the contingencies in the contract, it becomes a very messy process in order to try to get remedies for it. And so, you know, because obviously didn't stipulate any of those things in it. So, but I, you know, I am for actually simpler contracts. I think that most contracts get too complicated. I do agree. But having said that, I do also believe that in most instances, especially in if you're trying to advocate getting things to the consumer that they, you know, that they don't get screwed on, I think that, you know, a certain amount of regulation is necessary in order to try to protect the average consumer, because or otherwise, you know, I guess the second thing you can say is, well, like you just said, well, so nobody can buy stocks. Nobody should be able to. Well, since they can't engage in a contract they want understanding, well, then, you know, stocks should be reserved for only a few people or investments or anything. And I don't know if that's fair either. But, so I don't know. I think there's got to be a balance somewhere in the middle. That's what I guess I'm saying with that.
Yeah, I mean, I can see that. I just think, and you know, 3 weeks ago, I guess when we left off, we had a conversation that was somewhere along these lines, or maybe it was sometime, you know, where I mentioned that, you know, my fear on all of these things is, yeah, you can make a decent case that there is, you know, a good reason why you would want to have some sort of regulation in place. We were talking at the time about sex offenders, I believe.
But
you know, it is so incredibly easy to get the unintended negative side effects from almost anything that you do. And you know, does that mean you shouldn't do anything? I don't know. You know, my tendency, my gut is that in most of these cases, the right way to go is not try to regulate details and say you must do it this way or you must do it that way, but instead make very strong things in sort of the systematic architecture of the system of what the remedies are if, you know, in the case where there's an agreement in terms of requiring some level of understanding of the agreement and basically saying, hey, if both parties don't actually understand the agreement, then it probably shouldn't happen, you know? But I understand what reasons against that too, or at least requiring them to have competent representation that understands it or something like that. Or just having very strong, you know, ways to, I don't know, equalize the battleground if a dispute does come up or
right.
I don't know.
Because that's one of the big things that happens, which you just said right now. When a dispute comes up, the problem is you're a little guy versus a major corporation. They got an army of lawyers.
Fucked.
You've got nothing. You're fucked. You're fucked. You're toast. Okay, forget it. You're never going to win.
And this is the same thing that occurs, you know, we've talked about before when, you know, the recording industry goes after people for sharing files and stuff.
Exactly.
Same thing. You know, or in almost all of these cases, you've got a highly unequal situation where, you know, you've got someone who has absolutely no viable resources to combat the big company they're up against.
Agreed.
You know, and so, you know, they may, you know, depending on the situation, they may be in the right, but it doesn't matter because
it doesn't matter anyway.
They can't fight it.
I don't know if it, you know, just by the way, you know, since I'm in the interest of time, I don't know if you've got anything else additional to say on this, that maybe we could move on so that way we, you know, we can talk about more other things. But I think that we've talked about this and I think we made our position clear on this.
Page two.
It's what?
I just said page two.
Okay. So this is the other thing I was going to talk about. Now, you know, I hear all these people talking about how the government is so bad and we need to turn things over to corporations. And I, you know, the last couple of weeks I've realized something. A fucking large corporation, and you worked at one as well.
It is a freaking government. It's just as bad.
It's just as bad. Let me disabuse anybody. I mean, if you have not worked at one of these major, I mean, at any of these major corporations, if you think that the bureaucracy at these companies is not as bad as the government, you're crazy. I mean, small companies are nimble and are able to do certain things.
But they have their own problems as well.
They have their own problems as well. But I can tell you that, you know, no fucking large corporation is – if you think that they are not bureaucratic, if you think that they – if you – do you really think they are not that much better than the government?
You know, I'll go in and say that, that this is something that varies, you know, significantly from place to place. I mean, I've been in, you know, two large companies my major career, and – the environment and the culture and the degree to which all those kind of bureaucratic things come up is vastly different in the two locations.
Absolutely.
You know, and you know, and I'd say those things are much less where I currently am in the tech industry than they were in the financial industry where I was before. But yeah, nevertheless, I mean, yeah, I mean, I am not at all convinced that as an automatic thing, private is always necessarily better than government. I think that it is in many cases, and I think the key to whether it is in most cases, at least for you know a profit-driven private company, is the goal you are trying to achieve one that can easily be aligned with the profit motive?
Yes.
Because if the answer is yes... Like you know, if your goal you know is you know build a kick-ass car, you know, or build a fast nice computer that people will want to buy. Okay, yeah, I put my faith in you know Steve Jobs and Apple to build a better computer than the federal government could ever come up with.
Yes, you know, I agree.
However, you know, in some of the other stuff we've been talking about, you know, healthcare, I don't know. Because I think that in that case, your goal, you know, at least what I think your goal should be is something that relates to some sort of combination. And I think I said this in a previous show, too, some kind of combination of longevity and quality of life as an overall basis for your society. And can you align that with the profit motive nicely or not? I don't know.
I don't know. And I will tell you that, you know, the one thing is when we talk about that, you talk about most major corporations. I mean, if you go to their fucking HR departments, my God. I mean, if you think – I mean, you thought you walked into the Social Security office, okay? It's the same shit. It's the same bureaucracy. It's the same crap. It's just – you know, so – you know, I'm sorry, but let me disabuse anybody. You really think that a major Fortune 500 company it really isn't a fucking bureaucracy? I think you're out of your mind. Okay, so
okay, on that, it's time for our second break. And before I start the break, I just want to mention this week we are going to have two poems of the week because last week I didn't do one, so I'm going to catch up and do last week's poem and then this week's poem. Very exciting, I know, right?
Oh, no, I know. I'm tingling.
Okay, we'll be right back. This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tell Motel. Ask No Questions by Lauren Kizian Eileen. Love, the door inside me is locked, and the bones are begging to be let loose with their drums and handbells, with their tales of the sea at sunrise. I confess to the carrying of secrets. I confess to bearing songs not meant for your tongue. Some longings are too heavy to move, others too spiked to cling to. Leave the unused to their dusty sleep. After all, I have learned to live well enough without them. Let me wring my occasional tears and stare from time to time into corners in which you see no incense. Let me unbury my gods in secret and rebind them to my prayers. My necessary guilt. Let me believe my happiness complete, this body with your name on its gate, this deaf heart that burns and shines and keeps on turning the key. For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday. Okay, and we're back. Hope you enjoyed your poem.
I'm not volunteering to read the poems because I got home today at 7 in the morning because we went to a club last night. It was my wife's 30th birthday. Yes, she is.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, well, it's actually on Wednesday, but I'm going to be out of town, so therefore she insisted that she wanted to go out. Okay, so we went to this place. And we did not get home until past 7 in the morning, okay? Now, my wife has spent the whole day sleeping, especially since she, you know, pretty much drank half a bottle of tequila last night. So, you know, yeah, nice. Yeah, so it's but we're here, and you know, I'm still. Actually, I didn't drink too much, but I didn't sleep. Okay, so I'm just, you know.
Oh, poor baby, not sleeping.
Yeah, I know. So anyway, I know you're beating me on that department. I'm sorry, but anyway, okay. So I actually there's a couple of things that I wrote down this week about suicides. Due to bad things in the economy. I'd seen a number of notes in the news recently of different people committing suicide because of their bad financial situation. You know, in some instances, you had one guy. I mean, there were very, very different reasons. One was a guy that apparently was under investigation by the IRS. Another guy just simply, you know, succumbed to the financial pressures. Another guy, which is the guy that I actually focused a little bit more, was just, he just seemed like a guy that, you know, you and I could identify with, you know? It's a guy who had worked, a career guy, worked at a couple of corporations, worked up until, you know, he isn't older than us, to his mid-50s, and worked here and there, and had always had been able to get jobs. Changes in the industry happened. The guy all of a sudden, you know, went without work, and had been without work for the last couple of years, you know, really about since a year and a half. And the guy got very despondent and just, you know, wound up killing himself because he just, you know, was despondent about the fact that he couldn't find work. You know, I the reason I brought this up is, I think it's sometimes it is very easy, you know, when we get into these difficult situations and times when, you know, one's having problems with their work or having some economic problems to get so down on themselves to get to that point. And I got to admit that I, you know, sometimes, especially when you're – when one's having problems at work, et cetera, it's so easy to box oneself one in, you know. You wind up, oh, my God, this thing's never going to improve. I'm going to be – you know, what the heck? What am I gonna do? My life, blah 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 blah. I think it's very easy to do, but I guess the one thing is just bring some perspective to life. I mean, this stuff is not your be all end all. You know, I mean, if you this person, for example, that committed suicide, had family, had friends, had people that cared for him. You know, it's not like he was gonna be homeless and like destitute without food or something if you know, if worse came to worse, you know. There were always gonna be people that were, you know, that were his friends and family that would be willing to help him, you know, even if the worst case ever came to be. And I think it's very important that people appreciate when you have friends, family, etc., that you know, I think that when you've built a network like that of people that, you know, even the worst cases, you know, it's not going to be that bad, you know, unless you make it be, unless you keep believing it. I mean, it's just, I don't know. You could just drown yourself in it. You know, it's like you become stuck in the quicksand and you make it a self-fulfilling prophecy, I guess. I don't know what
you know, and I can't, yeah, I have trouble even imagining, you know, the psychological state someone would need to be in. Now, you know, Brandy has had over the course of her life, I believe, two acquaintances who committed suicide, one of which she was closer to than the other, I believe. And you know, but, you know, I honestly try to put myself in that mindset, and I can't. I can't imagine, you know, sort of the series of events that would put me into a place where I'd want to go there. I mean, I guess part of it is that there is at some point, a chemical factor that's in play too. Whenever you're talking about severe depression, it's not just the same as you're sad. Mm-hmm. You know,
I agree.
There are things going on in the brain that you know, just short circuit a whole lot of other things and a whole lot of the rational processes that you think would normally be there and the protections that are there. But you know, I don't know. It's looking at it externally, it's always a sad situation, and you wish these people would find help or do something before it got to that stage. But, you know, I don't know.
I just think, you know, it's very important to keep the perspective. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter what the heck, you know, the situation is and how bad it, you know, it's just I think we make our situations sometimes, we box ourselves into situations where we make sometimes feel, you know, when you want to feel bad about something, you keep, oh, my God, my life sucks. Everything's just horrible. I can't get anything done. And you know,
and I can relate to that on more narrow levels, I guess. Not necessarily getting into the depressed phase, but I know there are things like that will, you know, aggravate me. That, you know, if I sort of step back, I'm like, you know, it's really not that important. But at the time,
yeah,
you know,
you think it's like the end of the world, you know,
it's
at that
the end
moment.
Of the world. And what happens is you spin yourself up.
Yes.
Because you start like fixating on whatever that thing is and getting yourself more and more agitated about it and thinking about more and more things about it.
Yes.
Why it's bad, it's, you know, and then it just spirals and gets worse and worse and worse to the point where it can be, you know, incredibly intense.
Yes.
And you know, from my point of view, when that happens, that's typically, you know, I'll be angry about something, or I'll be frustrated about something, those kinds of things. But I could easily see that same kind of dynamic playing into you being depressed about something.
Yes.
And in a lot of things, you know, the calm, cool advice is sort of to step back, distance yourself, calm down, give yourself some time to mellow out, and then maybe look at it from a fresh perspective. But if you're in the moment of that, and if you are not, if you don't have somebody else sort of outside you to sort of take you by the shoulders and shake you and tell you you have to do that, it
right.
can be very hard to break out of that cycle.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. So anyway, so that's that was that topic. I just wanted to bring that up and share that I, you know, I'd seen that in the news, and I guess I want to talk a little bit about that. I don't know. Where are we on time? You want to move to something else?
We're about a minute short, but let's take a break, and we'll be back for our segment 4 after this. This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tell Motel. River Fire by David Wallach. Water burns. Often a finger is a vessel punctured as it moves through guarded channels. As if we were ever afraid to speak of desires. Once the mouth. As if we could cover every possible hole from which blood has been known to pool and rust. How many hands does it take to suffocate a shoreline? As if we tried to cup a burning artery. If the blade of grass at the bank that bends then creases torn from the fistfuls. As if driving into, no guards for the rails. The bone cries, then marrow, as if our shapes extinguished shape. From ontic to particulate matters, of seas for tearing at the river, then unseen the difference, tete-a-tete, unless the eye quenches, as if we could, by holding our breaths, scare the quoting, to shift from things to shifts that are shifted, as if we could tell who is marked or when it occurred, if when was ever this wind that is meant as sounded, spears for the temples to engorge or be engorged by. How abstraction drowns a causeway, how oxygen needs to be said just once more for oxygen to become its opposite. Mouth, ugliest of human protrusion, as if the river did not catch, the flame is not now mouthed, this particular water's lit and shit-filled kiss. For more like this, go to notellmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday. And once again, we are back. You got
so I guess
topic.
The one final topic that I had, I actually only had this next one written down. It's talking. talking a little bit about what's been happening in politics in the last few weeks, and you know what I gotta say, I've been seeing a lot of since February. We've been seeing all this polarization of the different groups, and one of the things that I heard during the last week was that Obama was losing a lot of support from people who were on the left because he felt that he had left them. And I guess that the one thing is that it's kind of screwy when this happens because, you know, Obama is a guy that was trying to really go towards the middle, which is normally what I felt, you know, most presidents used to do up until Bush's election. I think that, you know, that most presidents, even though they usually would have pandered to their group that really gave their support. Yep. You know, by the time that it came to be election, they were, you know, they were kind of like relatively centrist. Okay, you know, so
I mean, there's that old phrase that said American politics is played within what the 40-yard line, 60, whatever.
Yeah. Between the 30-yard lines. That's what, you know. It's in the middle. Yes, and I guess it. You know, I don't know. I mean, do I really think it's bad that the guys at the on the extremes feel like? I mean, I think that Obama's trying to carve a path somewhere down the middle. That means that you probably piss off a lot of people on both extremes.
Well, yeah, and you know, and my solo show 2 weeks ago, I said something exactly like this, along the lines of, you know, what do you people expect? This is what he said.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this isn't him like coming out and he's a surprise conservative. I mean,
right.
You know, you read his book and he was praising, you know, George H.W. Bush's foreign policy.
Yeah.
You know, and every single speech he did involved reaching out to the other side and taking the good ideas they have and melding them with these. And, you know, so, yeah. And yeah, I mean, it upsets me on some issues too. There are some issues where I wish he'd be going further and faster than he is. You know, but yeah, it's what he said he'd do.
Yeah.
So like to everybody who's like, oh my God, he's left us. I'm like, were you never paying attention in the first place? Or worse, were you actually thinking he was lying and he really agreed with you on everything and he just wasn't saying so and you liked him anyway?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I don't know. So, but I think that even, you know, the one thing is, even though the guys on the extremes are upset, I think that the overall numbers are still okay anyway. And one thing that I've said about this, you know, the approval ratings right now mean nothing. Okay, they may mean difficulty in passing bills or certain things like that, but in terms of the election, I'd say way out. Fucking bullshit. Because I know.
Oh, you mean 2012? Yeah, no. If anybody's even thinking about, I mean, 2012 is so far away. It's nonsensical to even talk about it right now. Now, 2010 is getting close, though.
Now, 2010 is getting close. That's true. But I think the one thing is that I was looking back a little bit towards the early 80s. When Ronald Reagan became president, and at the beginning of his administration, I mean, he came into a very bad recession. I mean, I hate to break it to everybody, but his numbers weren't all that great because people were unhappy that the economy wasn't turning around fast enough. I think it was John Stewart that said that apparently all these people were surprised that the fairies that were being expected that were going to arrive immediately and solve the nation's problems didn't materialize. I just don't understand people, you know, what the fuck they expected, you know? It's like I said, I think I said 6 months ago or something, that I guess, you know, Obama was supposed to crawl under the Oval Office desk and, like, find a magic switch that, you know, Bush forgot to hit, and, you know, all of a sudden he'd hit it and everything would be fine. And it doesn't work that way. I mean,
but I will say this, that there are certain things that he has – is continuing of the Bush policy that if he had wished to – he could have stopped much more quickly. Like, you know, as an example, you know, he's making a big show about wanting to close down Guantanamo, but he's authorizing a lot of the things that went on in Guantanamo to continue happening in Bagram, in Afghanistan. And, you know, so, And that's not a, I haven't gotten around to it yet. That's, he's defending Bush policies in court, you know, and so, and where he could choose at one moment's
notice. Oh, no, no, I know that, and I understand that, but, you know, you're talking about an overall broad, you know, there are so many things that are being, trying to be tackled at once right now. We're talking That's about healthcare, true. We're talking about the economy, we're talking about financial regulation, financial industry regulation, we're talking about so many fucking things all at once, and I'm, you know, I think that, you know, he's proposed financial regulation improvements, okay? He has proposed a plan, you know, he has been, you know, he had laid out a framework to try to improve, you know, health coverage for people in the U.S. You know, he's done a certain number of steps to try to improve our foreign policy position, you know, for example, like what happened this week where he decided to not go ahead with a missile shield that that Bush had proposed, which was contentious, not just with the Russians, but also the Western Europeans were not very happy about. You know, there are a lot of fronts that there are initiatives and certain policies that have been decided to go forward. Is everything happening at the speed and all these things at the same time? I mean, shit, I wish there were certain things that were happening better, but, you know, I also – it's a lot on one plate at one time. I would not have wanted to be president right now. I'll tell you this. I can tell you this right now. If I would have been – they would have come to me on November, Ivan, we can't find anybody to be president. You want to be president? I would have been like, hell no. I don't want to do this. Find somebody else. Forget about it.
Like I've told you forever, the place you want to be is not president. You want to be like one of the president's close advisors who has his ear and can tell him what to do. But
Right. But I don't, yeah, right, right. Right. I don't want to fucking be president. No, forget about that shit. Jesus Christ, you know, I mean, you know, shit economy, war, this and that, fuck.
But you got a nice plane.
Yeah, I do like the plane. I do like the plane. You know, that part would be nice. If I could get that plane in my job, I'd be thrilled to pieces, I tell you this. So anyway, so that's actually, you know, I think that that was my last topic. I'm talking about going a little bit towards the middle. I think that people just keep acting like, you know, he's screwing everybody or something. I don't know. And I like you said, he's actually acting the way that he has said he would. And I just, you know, surprised that people don't understand that. And we're also having that G20 meeting this week in our beloved Pittsburgh, by the way. I don't know if you noticed.
Oh, yeah, that's right. There's another one of those happening. And so, you know, we had someone talking about a few weeks back, you know, how we were biased on which protesters we complained about. So
I was going to pile into these moron protesters that are going to be in fucking Pittsburgh. You know what really drives me up the wall? I was seeing some posts by some bloggers in Pittsburgh. You know, these people are like small business owners that are getting their stores, you know, well, they think that they may be vandalized because nothing has happened yet, but because obviously they've seen what's happened in other cities. I mean, you know, these are not peaceful protesters. These fucking people are going out there and causing mayhem and destruction on a whole bunch of innocent people for no particular reason whatsoever. Okay, you want to have a fucking protest? You want to have a civil protest where you go out and you pronounce your point and whatever, and you do that? You can do that. Why the fuck do you have to go and, like, vandalize and destroy, you know, a fucking city, you know, that's hosting this that, you know, with a whole bunch of decent, hardworking people that, for the most part, they have nothing to do with the decision to even hold the fucking meeting there? Okay?
Yep. On that, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back for one final segment. Da, 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 da. Okay, we're back. I mean, I can't agree more. And, you know, I'd go even further. Like, I fully agree with the right of everybody to do peaceful protests where you just, you know, hold up your little signs and chant or whatever.
And you have speeches and whatever, and you pronounce what you're talking about, and you try to explain to people whatever, that's fine. But
I still think those people are morons. You have every right to do it, but I am just not into the protest culture. I mean, you know, and this, you know, probably comes to be from being dragged along to these things when I was a little kid. But, you know, I don't care if it's a topic that I agree with 100%. I generally think the protesters are idiots.
Okay, so on that note, you know, see anything else that you come to mind? I'm out of my topic list, so I'm
okay. Well, I got a couple little things to finish our last couple minutes up. I'm just noting an article that I saw about John Thain, who was the CEO of Merrill Lynch right before it got acquired.
And, your favorite company.
My favorite company, and if you remember, he got into a bit of a controversy afterwards when it was discovered that one of the things while he was doing while Merrill was crashing and burning
was redecorating his office.
Spending quite a bit of money redecorating his office. I forget how much, but it was.
He had a $3,000 waste basket, and I'm not exaggerating. He bought a multi-$1,000 waste basket and shit like that. It was millions of dollars. It was a couple of million.
So there's a quote here from him. This is a short note from Bloomberg Newswire. Let me get the whole thing up because I was just looking at a summary. One second. Ah, my computer's being slow. Okay, read the whole story. Click here. So anyway, the long and short of this is he was just interviewed, here's what he said. Here's the quote from John Thain. "We decorated it in the style that Merrill Lynch offices were, which was very, very nice," Thain said yesterday during a speech in Philadelphia. "That was a mistake, and I'm sorry that I did that. If I had that to do it over again, I'd furnish it at IKEA."
Well, actually, I'll tell you this, that if, you know, he's a moron. I mean, I'm sorry. My point is that, so he's an interim CEO. He knows he's probably not going to be there for a while. I mean, he got named full-time CEO, but the one thing is that he knew that he was, you know, actually at that time, I must digress. No, he had not known that he was going to sell Merrill Lynch at the time. But the truth of the matter is that knowing that the entire financial markets are in turmoil, why the fuck do you need to redecorate the office? What's so wrong with however the fuck the office was decorated before? I mean, why the hell have to spend any money, period, on redecorating it?
Right.
Other than sometimes I mean, for example, when I've moved from desks or to one office to another, I've had maybe some adjustments made. Like I've got a new chair because one that's ergonomically, you know, good for my back, or, you know, change the keyboard tray where it is or move something here or there. But other than that, I have not found the need to do a throw everything out.
Give the guy a chair, a desk, and a computer, and you're done.
And you're done. And you're done.
I mean, I'm being a little flip there. I understand, you know, if you're a top executive, you're going to have meetings in there. You're going to have all kinds of people in there. You want to somewhat impress those people. So you want to have things that are, yes, you don't want to have a dump. But
no, I agree.
At the same time, you know, Meryl, at having been there, and
yeah, the offices were quite nice.
Maybe not all the offices, but having been at least on a handful of occasions at the executive suite in the New Jersey offices, not necessarily in the New York offices, although I think maybe I was there once too.
Yeah, you were, because you told me.
Those were pretty sweet, you know. there's nothing that needed to be renovated. Those were nice offices that would impress people if they came to visit. there's no need for a new $3,000 wastebasket, because the one that was there was probably already a $2,000 wastebasket.
Dollar wastebasket, right, you know. That's been my impression. Okay, all right, so. IKEA.
IKEA, definitely, you know, and I'm a big fan of IKEA. although I heard they're getting investigated or something too. But
for what?
The weird thing here, and I don't have details about this, so go research this, and we can talk about it next week maybe. But IKEA is apparently actually owned by a nonprofit, not by a for-profit company.
Okay.
So there's an IKEA holding company, and then that's owned by some IKEA nonprofit trust thing. Mm-hmm. And that's supposedly operating as a charity, but they're under investigation because at least one regulatory body is like, do you actually do any charity, or do you just pay the salaries of your board members, who are all the founders of IKEA?
Okay, good point. I don't know. I will tell you that Rolex is also owned in that same manner. As a charity, I do know that they do spend a lot of the money into charity. So there are a number of European companies that are organized that way. But I don't know. I'll
anyway,
look it up.
It was just kind of interesting to me, because I mean I didn't even know it was owned by.
I had no idea either. I figured it was just a regular company, you know.
But it's kind of interesting. Anyway, two more quick things, and then we're out of time in our new 5-10-minute segment format. One is, I have not seen any details, but I noticed there is Iran bubbled up again for a few days this last week. And I don't know exactly what was going on, other than I saw a couple blogs that spent a lot of time talking about it back when things were blowing up a couple months ago, talking about it again. Apparently a bunch of additional big rallies and things going on. So again, I don't know what's going on, but maybe we should pay attention to Iran again for a little while. And then finally, because we're just about out of time, I do want to mention that Yvonne and I, at the very beginning of the show, were once again having massive connection problems like we did 3 weeks ago on the massive unlistenable show.
I must admit, I listened to it for a minute and I cracked up laughing and then stopped.
I know at least one person tried to listen to at least most of it. I don't know if they made it to the end, other than me, of course.
If you did, please let me know, because I will send you a small prize.
Actually, I said exactly that at the very end of the show. I added a little segment. I let the theme music play out, and then after the theme music ended, I'm like, are you still there? Are you kidding? How the hell did you get here? And I told people to email me if they actually made it to the end of that show.
Well, I guess they didn't, so therefore,
no,
okay.
No. What I wanted to mention is, we were having those problems again this time, and this was with, our usual setup is GarageBand recording an iChat conversation, and we just could not get it to work, so we switched over to Skype. So we've done this whole show recording it in Skype, and I'll later bring it back into GarageBand and edit it. So for listeners out there, feedback, please. How was the sound? How did everything work this time? Was it much, is it much better than before? Because if so, we're going to do this the rest of the time.
Well, I'll tell you one thing about this. We have had no feedback on the show whatsoever.
No feedback. I haven't heard any feedback. We haven't crashed. I'm able to watch the files sort of spin in as they come. If I remember right, the last time we used Skype, there were a couple oddities that I had to go through in order to actually edit it together later, but whatever. But anyway, so give us feedback on how the show sounded today. And if it's all good, then we'll probably continue to use this method rather than the other method going forward. And another side effect, we found out that if we really want to, we could record this as a video podcast.
Yes, we could. But I don't know. I saw Sam's beard and I became a little bit intimidated by it. So therefore, I don't know. And I don't want to be wearing a fucking tie or doing this. So no, I think I'm out on the video. Okay.
Yeah, all right. No, so let's no video. Okay. So no. Anyway,
we're, so let's wrap up this fucker. Okay. All right.
Let's. Okay. Thanks everybody who sent me good wishes on the new baby. By the way, I really appreciate it. And someday I'll catch up and be able to sleep again. But I really appreciate all the thoughts, wishes, etc. that came in by email, Facebook, my blog, everywhere else. Okay. That's it for Curmudgeon's Corner. Thanks everybody for joining us. As usual, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com with any thoughts, questions, comments, random insults, whatever. We'll get back to you on those. And also, of course, tell your friends to listen. Now that we're both of us are here again, and you can actually understand what we're saying. So
yes.
And we're trying to tighten it up with shorter segments and not quite as long a show. So, you know, come on in, you know. Anyway, thanks everybody, and goodbye.
Bye.